talking to me?
Funny, like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead, make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer again with you.
Good morning. Today is February 13th, the day before Valentine's Day. This is the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Kate Marquis.
Kate Marquis has joined us, and we're excited to have you, Kate.
Yes. Thank you.
And we missed last week, so we're a little behind. We got 9 movies to review and lots of other things to talk about. And yes. The Oscars are coming up 2 weeks from yesterday, so that's exciting.
Yeah, the BAFTAs happened yesterday or the day before. Yeah.
The BAFTAs.
Yeah, the British Oscars.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I'll take your word for it. What won?
What do you think won Best Picture?
Hacksaw Ridge.
La La Land.
La La Land.
Oh, yeah.
Stick a La La Land. All right, let's get started, though. Let's talk about first the top 10 at the box office over the weekend. Number 10 was The Space Between Us. We saw that. That never did find its audience. I guess being a lousy movie didn't help.
Despite a nice performance by the lead
but it
actor.
Certainly looked like something that would bring out, you know, its potential target, but it didn't. So
yeah.
Oh well. Number 9 was Lion. Oh, we saw that months ago. That made 4.1. La La Land. We were just talking about that made $5.0 million for 8th place. Rings is number 7 with $5.8 million. Rings actually debuted last weekend in number 2. It actually opened pretty strong. It dropped quite a bit. Dog's Purpose is still hanging in there. People are seeing that. I think the word of mouth is helping that movie. $7.4 million for a 6th place finish. Hidden Figures, which is still the only Oscar nominated Best Picture I haven't seen yet. I've got the screener. It's sitting by my television. I actually watched the first 15 minutes. I just can't get motivated to stick it back in there and watch the rest.
It's homework for you.
Yeah. Number 4, Split. That's doing very well. That made $9.3 million. And then we jump up, way up, for number 3, which made $30 million, and that is John Wick, starring Keanu Reeves. And Jim saw that.
That's a chapter 2, though.
Yeah, John Wick's chapter 2. So, I don't know.
Yeah, it's got its audience there. You weren't at the screening at the Esquire last week, but it was literally standing room only almost.
Oh, yeah.
The people were just jammed in there.
All right. Well, we'll let you review that here in a minute. Number 2, 50 Shades Darker made $46.8 million, which I'm assuming that's substantially less than the first 50 Shades.
Yeah, I remember the first one did premiere at number 1.
And I think it made like $90 million or something. Came in made a lot less money, and it didn't even come in number 1 because number 1 was the Lego Batman movie. That Will Arnett, this box office gold, that made a massive $55.6 million. I saw that, and it was pretty crowded when I saw it Friday night. I'm not surprised. It had a lot of buzz, and the trailer was hilarious, and
it's kid friendly.
Yeah.
I mean, the other two big openings were R rated, so this was definitely something literally the entire family could enjoy.
And this week, what opens? Fist Fight opens. I don't know if that's going to make much money. The Great Wall has just expensive flop written all over it, but
I understand it's made a ton of dough overseas already. Right? Yeah. But I was like, what is Matt Damon doing in this?
That's the big question.
Yeah.
I saw the trailer.
It's like Richard Chamberlain in Shogun. All right, well, let's get started on these reviews because we've got 9 movies to review. Let's do a couple quick reviews of a couple of movies that opened last weekend, starting with The Space Between Us.
His heart will simply not have the strength in the Earth's gravity. Bones will be brittle.
He wouldn't even survive the trip back to Earth.
So the child remains classified on Mars?
Yes.
I reviewed The Space Between Us at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. I think I gave it 1.5 stars. I should go review my review because this movie has not entered my consciousness for 1 second in the 2.5 weeks since I've seen it. It's pretty forgettable.
Away.
It's pretty disposable. What'd you guys think of
it is pretty unmemorable. It's a shame. I think you mentioned, Kate, that the young actors are very good, but boy, they just have very little to work with.
Oh, that's so true.
And we both, Tom, I think, thought it was based on a young adult novel because it just kind of reeks of it.
It looks like it.
And I don't know, maybe it didn't find its audience because, you know, it doesn't know if it wants to be a science fiction thing or a teen love story or, you know, an on the run action film, and it's trying to be all of those things, and it's kind of flopping in all three.
And really a complete waste of Gary Oldman, who plays this kind of
he's miscast. It's a little creepy with him. Yeah. You know, it's too bad it's not based on a young adult novel, because then at least you would have had some dialogue that you could have gone into the novel and pulled out and put in this movie. This movie's just horribly written. Yeah. And it's stupid, too. I even pointed out the scene in my review where they're in this crop duster, this young couple, that are, and they crash into this barn. This barn explodes in this huge, you know, 100-foot in the air giant fireball that would incinerate everything. And then 5 minutes later, they're like combing through the barn, and it's just barely singed. You can actually see the crop duster. He goes, "Nope, no bodies in here."
Yeah,
I mean, that's just one of the many just ridiculous moments in this pretty awful film. And then they got the robot, the ubiquitous British accented robot.
He's kind of out of the picture after about the first 20
Apparently
minutes.
That was the director's voice. And,
oh, yes.
You know, it's interesting. I can't think of the director's name, but he made some good British films in
Peter
the 90s.
Chilson.
Yeah, what was it? Hear My Song with Ned Beatty. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
He directed that, and he directed something else that was pretty good. It's escaping me right now, but... He's come over to America, and he's made the Hannah Montana movie, and then I think he did Serendipity was his first Hollywood film with John Cusack.
That's kind of legit.
And then, maybe he needs to go back to England and make some more interesting films.
Well, I just hope that Miss, let's see, what is her name again? Brett Robertson. I think she's a great young actress, but boy, she's got to get some better scripts going on.
Well, she was good in, The Dog's Purpose was pretty good.
But that was kind of a, limited role. She's only in it maybe about 10, 15 minutes. Yeah. That at most.
And we pointed out that she is 8 or 9 years older than the actor Asa Butterfield, who plays her love interest in this film. But it's really, it's not an issue. I thought it might be, but she looks, I mean, she can
she
play
young.
18.
Yeah, she can do that for a couple more
She's a small person.
But I'm sure she's probably done with playing high school. I don't want to be filled in a high school hallway again,
kidding.
Probably.
Yeah.
But it's pretty unmemorable.
Yeah.
You know?
All right. So we don't recommend Space Between Us. Another movie that opened last weekend that I saw was Rings.
I keep thinking about this story. There's this video that kills you 7 days after you watch it.
I saw Rings last Friday night. It's actually pretty good. If you go to the Rotten Tomatoes, it's at a whopping 5%. Rings does not deserve to be at 5%. Horror movies just don't get any respect. It's not a great movie, but it's certainly not a 5% movie. Good grief, if you're familiar with the Rings legend, there's a movie called Rings that was made in Japan in the 90s, and they remade it, I think, around 2002, maybe.
With Naomi Watts,
yeah. And
they did a sequel to that, too, didn't
there they? There was Rings, too, yeah. It wasn't very good. But the basic premise is there's this VHS tape, and if you watch it, it's about a 45-second black and white bizarre imagery that concludes with this long-haired Japanese girl crawling out of this well. But if you watch it, then exactly 7 days later, you die.
You get the phone call saying
that's right. The phone rings, and then 7 days later, you die. This is a second sequel, and Naomi Watts' character is not back. It actually opens with John Galecki, is that his name? He was like
Johnny
Roseanne's son.
He's on The Big Bang Theory,
is that
Tom.
Right?
That's the biggest comedy on television.
All right, well, that explains why I don't know who this guy is. But anyways, he plays a college professor who's introduced at a flea market, and he finds this old VCR, so he takes it home, and there's a tape stuck in it, and so he takes it apart and gets this tape out and says, "Watch me," or something like that. No, it's the Ring tape. So Galecki watches it, and... So you assume 7 days later he's going to be dead. And then it cuts to this couple that are the two main characters. I don't know who played them. Some young, attractive actor and actress. Who cares? But he's going off to college, and she's staying home in their little town, and he goes off to college. But then she loses contact with him, so she goes to this college town and finds that Professor Galecki has – did not die after 7 days. He has actually harnessed the energy of the ring, and he has this whole cult of college students that are working in this mysterious lab on the college campus, sort of studying this tape. And they figured out that it's, you know, the whole meaning of life and death is trapped inside this tape. And if you watch it, you won't die if you have what they're calling a tail, which is somebody that watches it after you. So then they'll die. It's kind of like It Follows, you know, when passing along the venereal disease that could kill you. It's kind of like that. And that's kind of sort of interesting.
So it's a sequel. It's not a reboot.
It's not a reboot. No, it's definitely not a reboot.
Okay.
And then, like I say, there's this college and these all these students, and they're in this lab, and they've made big giant prints of their distorted faces, because I guess you get a distorted face if you watch this VHS. I don't know. But then a weird thing happens. About halfway through the movie, it just changes everything. It changes location. This young couple go to this small town to investigate the origins of the ring and find out who this little girl is that's crawling out of this well and who her mother was. And the whole movie just changes at that point. It becomes more, you know, gothic and woodsy, and there's a... Vincent D'Onofrio is this blind priest who is hiding all these dark secrets about what this small town did to the mother of the little girl that crawls out of the well and the ring. And that's sort of good, too. It's almost like it's two stories. It's almost like you've got this whole concept of the ring, and then there's this, I don't know, hour-long TV show or something with two episodes, because they really don't have much to do with each other. But the crazy thing is it never goes back to the college. You never find out what happened to these college students who had been studying the ring.
The cult.
Yeah, the cult. Now, John Galecki, he comes down to this small town, so you find out what happens to him. But I don't know if staying, you know, having the entire movie taking place in the college might not have worked. It was good for the first hour, but maybe they would have run out of ideas. Maybe it would have burned itself out. Maybe they couldn't come up with a good conclusion, so they moved it down to this small town story. But I don't know. It's really not that bad. It's actually very well made. It looks great. It's got some decent chills and some decent acting. It's got a great twist at the end. I'll give it that. Not a great horror movie, but it's about, you know, I reviewed Bye Bye Man a couple weeks ago, and I thought that was pretty good. This is maybe about on the level of that, kind of a mid-range horror movie, but certainly better than the 5% that is reflected over at Rotten Tomatoes. If I were to have reviewed it at WeirdMovieGeeks.com, I would have given it, I don't know, 2.5 or 3 stars. So I do kind of recommend Ring. And
pretty
it's actually
generous.
Doing pretty well. Yeah. Let's move on. Jim got to see 50 Shades Darker.
Oh, lucky me.
What do you want, Anastasia?
This time, no rules, no punishments, and no more secrets.
Does Dakota Johnson do any nude scenes in this film, Jim?
Oh, yes. Okay. And we get to see Mr. Dorman's derriere and all that. And I'd say if you like the first one, I guess you'll probably enjoy this one.
What if you didn't like the first one?
Well, then you are not, you're in a bad shape if you're having to go see the second one. Because the second one isn't as much fun as the first one. The first one, you're kind of introducing the characters. Like, there's a lot of campy humor. There's a lot of dialogue where you're going, what? You know, did they say that? You know, it was kind of fun in a bad movie kind of way, the first one.
Okay, the first one ends with her like closing an elevator, and they're separated. So I assume they get back together.
Well, yeah, they're trying to get back together. She goes to an art show by one of her buddies, the guy that had a thing for her in the first movie, and it turns out one whole wing is just photos of her. And guess who goes and buys all those photos?
Is it photos of her naked?
No, okay. Just, you know, nice little black and white photos. Uh-huh. And yes, Christian Grey is back, and he wants her back.
Well, he's a billionaire. He can afford those.
Oh, yeah, he can. He's just, you know, it's so funny. He's all of a sudden, they get to see him actually, you know, with his board of directors, so you actually see him doing business. But most of the time he's trying to woo her back. And this film actually introduces outside bad guys, villains, I should say. Dakota Johnson's character is being stalked by this young woman played by Bella Heathcote, who she sees all around. And it turns out she's a rejected ex-lover of Christian Grey who wants her revenge. She's doing a fatal attraction on him, or trying to. I think in the first film, I think Christian mentions that he was introduced to this kinky activity by an older lover, and we meet her in this film, and it's Kim Basinger.
All right, now we're talking.
Oh, yes.
Does she get naked?
No, but in one sequence, she gets a drink splash in her face, and seconds later she gets slapped. Yeah. So it's like two episodes of a dynasty together, you know, just amazing. And we've also got Dakota Johnson's boss at her book firm. She's working at some publishing place where she's reviewing books. And he's, you know, kind of interested in her, and he doesn't like Christian Grey. So he's become sort of a rival, and there's a scene with him, you know, trying to convince her to be with him. That's, you know, it's like the equivalent of the old silent heroine being tied to the train tracks. You're waiting for Christian Grey to burst in there and save her.
But tied naked to the train. My problem with the first one was just so darn boring. Moved like molasses.
This is pretty boring. I mean, they try to put in some action stuff. They have a helicopter crash at one point. But, you know, and he's introducing, you know, different other kinky things to her thing. But there's just no chemistry between these characters. And, you know, you're watching a lot of, you know, opulent settings and, you know, a lot of, you know, moneyed parties and all that. But it's just kind of boring. They even have they show it in the poster. They're wearing masks a la Eyes Wide Shut. Mm-hmm. But it's just kind of dull. Yeah. And, you know, during the end credits, all of a sudden they stop it to show you the trailer for the next one, which will be out in a year.
Yeah.
50 Shades Freer, which...
The actual trailer? Actual footage?
Yes, because they pull the Lord of the Rings in that they've shot this one and the next one at the same time.
Oh,
so they're
delaying
them a year. So you've got that to look forward to.
All right, so did you review it?
No, I did not. Oh, I think Michael did.
That's right.
Michael hit it pretty hard. I think he might have given it a star or something like that. But it's at like 8% of Rotten Tomatoes or something like that. It's dreadful. But the real shame is it's directed by James Foley.
Yeah.
And that name was so familiar. I looked him up and said,
he did Gambler, didn't he?
He did Glenn Ross. He did At Close Range.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got quite a resume, and he's having to do this, you know, this you know, junk, really. You know,
that's too bad. All right, so Jim does not recommend 50 Shades Darker. I should say. Let's move on. How about you guys? Bill, how about a quick review of The Red Turtle, nominated for Best Animated Film? What the heck? What country is this from?
This is interesting because it's actually a Studio Ghibli production. Studio out of Japan, where Hayao Miyazaki was the big superstar, but this is their first film not produced in Japan. This is, I assume, produced in France and Belgium and places like that. And it's by a Dutch-British director. Right. And did you want to talk about
Kate? Well, I was just going to comment that the animation style still looks very much the same, although the characters kind of look more European than Japanese. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they have the black dot eyes, and it's fairly simple line drawings. It's not you don't see every wrinkle in their clothing or whatever. But
it's no dialogue, you say?
No dialogue aside from some exasperated grunts and groans and some
the occasional
giggles.
Hey.
But
so it's good?
It's wonderful.
What's good about it? Kate, what's so good about this movie?
It's beautiful. I mean, it is line drawing.
Beautiful.
It's different than the CGI stuff. It feels like it's hand drawn, although I'm sure the computer aided in some sequences.
And at times it looks like a Japanese print, especially the shots of the ocean, because it takes place on an island.
Yes. It's the basic Castaway story, much like the recent Swiss Army Man. This guy ends up on an island, and you don't know what the circumstances were. You just see him clinging to the boat at the start of it.
Does he fart a lot?
No, nothing like that in there. But we've got some funny crabs that follow him around. And he's trying to escape the island. He's tying together. There's a lot of bamboo trees there.
Yeah.
And he's trying to create a raft, but something keeps, you know, hitting it from the underneath it. You think it's like a whale or a shark or something. So he's giving into despair. He's actually imagining seeing a violin quartet on the beach.
Yeah,
and so he's going out of his mind. So he finally finds out the cause of the wrecking of his raft, and it's
a red turtle, an enormous
huge red
sea turtle.
And I don't know, I guess we could talk a little bit about what happens, but they, you know, the turtle magically transforms, and he's not alone anymore. And it's wonderful. It's like I say, it's there's a great scene that, during a tsunami, that's really fantastic.
I thought it was a lot more like a folk tale, and it made me think more of Castaway than Swiss Army Man, because it's not a comedy. This is more of a drama, and it's very magical and very beautiful.
Are you reviewing this for a Wee Movie Geek?
I am reviewing it.
Reviewing. How many stars are you
going to give it? I'm going to give it at least 4. I think it's just gorgeous. And it is nominated for an Oscar for Best Animated Feature.
All right, very good. All right, so Kate and Jim both highly recommend The Red Turtle. Number one at the box office over the weekend was the Lego Batman movie, which made a whopping $55.6 million. Jim, did you review that?
No, I can't recall. Yes, I did.
It was so long ago.
Wasn't me.
Yes, it was me.
No, that's right.
Me.
You did review it. I read your review. You gave it 4 out of 5 stars. It's a darn funny movie, isn't it?
It is very entertaining. If you enjoyed the Lego movie, I think you'll enjoy this one.
Master Bruce, your greatest fear is...
Snakes?
No.
Clouds?
No. It's being a part of a family again.
No, now it's snake clouds because you put that idea in my head.
Sir, you need to take responsibility for your life, and it starts by raising the young orphan you adopted.
I thought I was being sarcastic.
And if you love Batman, I mean, you know, this is great because it's kind of making him a fun character again.
Yeah, who doesn't love Batman?
Yeah. Well,
references all the Batmans.
Oh yes, there's a wonderful sequence where they have him in different poses from the former Batman film, and then they recreate poses from the comic books, and they even made a reference to the 1940s black and white series.
Yeah, but. Yeah, but it's not a pose from the 1966 TV show. It's actually a clip.
Yes,
it's really funny.
Yeah, Alfred say that unfortunate 1966 incident.
Yeah.
And this is a blast. This is the same character from the Lego Movie that Will Arnett voices, and it's about him discovering that he can actually work with people, and you get introduced to Robin, who's played by Michael Cera, this sort of super nerdy kid. And Ray Fiennes is Alfred, and Rosario Dawson is Babs Gordon, and some of the other superheroes are in there. Channing Tatum is Superman, and Batman has the idea that he's going to banish the Joker, who's voiced by Zach Galifianakis, to the Phantom Zone, and of course, Joker turns the tables and releases all these pop culture villains from the Phantom Zone.
Including Egghead.
From the Phantom Zone, you've got King Kong and the Kraken.
Oh, yeah, the Kraken.
And Sauron, and the Ancient Smiths from
and
the
Medusa,
Matrix.
And...
Yeah, and the creature from Black Lagoon and Dracula. And it's a lot of fun. Yeah. And even Lord Voldemort.
That's right.
And
Ralph Fiennes actually voices Alfred.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming he didn't voice
Voldemort. No, another actor did. I'm trying to recall. The who's who's of voice actors. The best voice casting to me is Two-Face is voiced by Billy Dee Williams, who played Harvey Dent in the 1989 Batman film. Okay. So that's a wonderful tribute. So, yeah, it's enormously entertaining. It's gorgeous to look at. It's great to see them assemble all the different weapons and bits of transportation. That's a lot of fun.
It is.
And, yeah, it's just a blast. It's one of those films that literally the whole family can enjoy.
I will say, though, that the first half hour is just delirious. You're having a blast with this movie. The second half hour, I was like, this movie is sustained. It's still pretty darn entertaining. But about that third half hour, I was kind of ready for it to wrap up. It does go on a little bit. It's so loud and there's so much going on. It kind of wears you down a little bit, like a lot of animated films and a lot of action films do. But I liked it more than the first Lego movie.
Yeah, there was a controversy about that, which was better, but I kind of prefer this.
I do
because
too.
I like the Batman.
Although I did like the Will Ferrell live action stuff, which was kind of weird. It really didn't fit in the first Lego movie.
Yeah, people were complaining that ruined the movie.
No, I didn't think it ruined the movie at all. How can Will Ferrell ruin a movie? That's
really?
All right. Well, so Jim and I both really like the Lego Batman movie, and Kate hasn't seen it yet.
No, but I want to.
Go see it. Go see it on the way home from here. All right, let's move on. We still got 4 more movies to review. Tony Erdmann is a German film that opens this weekend at the Landmark Theaters.
It is up for a Best Foreign Film at the Oscars, and it's a pretty terrific film. It's I will warn you, it's close to 3 hours, but it's kind of like you're following these people for this amount of time, and it's kind of interesting. It's German, right, Kate?
Well, it's German. It's essentially a comedy about this young woman who's this high-powered businesswoman, and she's, you know, very, very serious. And her dad, that she's kind of slightly estranged from, is not serious about anything. He goes around with false teeth. He wears wigs. Yeah. And he comes and just disrupts her business meetings and all.
Yeah,
and
he's just retired from being a school teacher, or being a music teacher in school, so he needs something to do. So he's made it his mission to lighten up his daughter.
But, you know, he treats like her and everybody like their kids, like the kids he used to work
My daughters
with
hate
school.
When I do that.
And he trails her around Europe, kind of.
As this character, Tony Erdman, who he says is a consultant to the prime minister or something like that.
German ambassador.
Right. And it's kind of a weird, wacky character. He's like a semi-motivational speaker. And, it's the relationship between the father and daughter is really great in the film. And it has one of my favorite scenes in which he finally is starting to get her to lighten up by singing. And it is an American classic song.
That's one of the best scenes. Not all the comedy works in this film, in my opinion, because some of the jokes kind of go on way too long. It's like, all right, we've already drained the humor out of it. And there's one scene in particular where that's true. But the one where she sings, that's fabulous. That's almost worth the ticket price.
Yeah, definitely. So well done, Phil. There's rumors that this might bring Jack Nicholson out of semi-retirement.
Yeah, and Kristen Wiig. Like, really? I thought they've announced it.
They haven't. They have, really. I knew there was a rumor about trying to get Nicholson to do it.
I thought it was like Hollywood Reporter had an article about it over the weekend. It would be good. Nicholson needs a comeback movie.
Well, I hate for him to throw in the towel already, because I think he's got some more good work.
And his last movie, what was it, that lousy James Brooks thing?
Oh, yes. How Do You Know?
Something like that. You hate to see him go out on that.
Oh,
terrible.
Goodness.
All right, so who's reviewing Tony Erdman for Weird Movie
I
Geek?
Think I am.
And how many stars are you going to be giving this German film, Tony Erdman?
I think I'll probably give it 4.5. Uh-huh. And it probably would have got 5 if it had been a little more. Yeah, just kind of cut off some of the jokes.
All right, well, very good.
It's a brisk, two and three quarter hours.
Right.
Yeah.
It does not run too long. So that's
speaking of long movies, I heard Cure for Wellness is 2.5 hours.
Oh, my.
Welcome back, Mr. Lockhart.
Signs of concussion?
Depleted immune system. I would like to recommend a treatment.
Yes,
you guys both
see
that?
Yes, we did.
All right. I couldn't go to the screening. It's a horror film. It's by Gore Verbinski, who directed the first Rings movie. We were just talking about Rings. Is it any good, guys?
Parts of it are very good, I would say. It's got a nice atmosphere. Dane DeHaan from The Place Beyond the Pines and The Last Green Goblin and The Last Spider-Man film. He's this high-powered young guy at an investment firm, and he's going places, and he's assigned to bring back one of the board of directors because he has to sign something off. It's kind of like, collateral beauty.
Yeah,
a little collateral beauty in there. And, of course, this guy is at this sort of health spa in, is it Germany, I guess?
Switzerland,
yeah, right. Yeah. And once he gets there, it all becomes like a Hammer film from, 50 years ago.
Oh, yeah. It's just packed with all kinds of references to other horror films. I mean, when they show up, the little town looks like the little towns you see in Dracula.
Yeah.
And we have all these people, German Gothic references, and actually there's a kind of visual pun because some of the German Gothics or young German Goth teenagers.
Why is this movie 2.5 hours long?
Well, because it has 6 different endings.
Well, I think, the first part, the first 2/3 of it, 3/4 of it are pretty well done, horror stuff. I thought it was really scary. It was really built suspense, and it winds up with this, terrific ending, and then it goes on for 30 minutes after that.
Yeah, it's one of those films where it just doesn't, you think it's ending, and then, it's starting back up again, and then, it just gets kind of frustrating by the end of it.
Oh, it's very frustrating.
Yeah, and, what is it, Jason Isaacs is the head of the spa, and he's doing his best, Peter Cushing kind of, evil scientist, and, something weird's going on there with not afterlife, but prolonging life and all that. And there's some good atmospheric moments, and in some stuff they have this this big waltz at the end of it, and of course they have they bring in a big fire, so it almost has sort of a feel of the Roger Corman Poe movies from the 60s. But I don't know. It
Who's this young actor? He looked familiar.
Yeah. Say he was in The Place Beyond the Pines. He was in Chronicle. Hmm. He was So he's got a big sci-fi film. He's okay. You know,
I thought he was really good. Actually, I thought most of the film was really effective as far as being scary, although it makes all these references.
The poster has some gal in a bathtub.
Yeah, that's Mia Goth, I think, is actually her name.
It is.
Yeah, that's a weird relationship he has with her in it. I don't know if that quite works.
Looks a little like Shutter Island from the trailer.
Yeah, there is a little bit of that, but there's a number of, you know, it's kind of this little, spa is kind of, there's a sort of cultish sort of element
to
it.
From The Lobster.
Or what was the one where Anthony Hopkins played Kellogg and Rosie O'Donnell was in leather?
There's something for wellness also, I think.
It was wellness to me.
The pursuit, the road to wellness. If it were, you know, if it could have compacted the endings a little bit more and, you know, trimmed it a little bit, I would be more, you know, enthusiastic about it. But
So who's reviewing this?
I believe Michael is reviewing.
Michael reviewed it. All right. Well, look for Michael Hefner's review of Cure for Wellness Thursday evening at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. Let's see. Kate reviewed The Salesman for WeAreMovieGeeks.com over the weekend. How many stars did you give The Salesman?
I would give that 5.
Oh, yeah. Did you review it? You reviewed it and gave it 5?
Oh, yeah.
Sounds like you liked The Salesman. What is The Salesman about, and what did you like about it so
much? Well, first of all, this is it's an Iranian film, and it's another one that's nominated for an Oscar in that foreign language category. The director is Asghar Farhadi, who won an Oscar. His film, A Separation, won an Oscar in 2012. And this is similar in that it's also a middle-class couple in Tehran. You know, they seem at first like, you know, a couple in any, you know, modern city. Everything seems very normal. But as the story unfolds, which is kind of a personal family drama source, as the story unfolds, we learn all these things about Iranian society and life under, you know, their current government restraint. You know, it has all these wonderful social commentaries that are below the surface. But the basic premise is this young couple, they're forced to leave their apartment because of a construction mistake that's made it uninhabitable. And they move into an apartment on short notice. And almost as soon as they move in, there's a home invasion and the wife is attacked. And the rest of the film kind of unfolds like a crime thriller as they try to deal with this. And the reason why that doesn't unfold the way it would in a European city or here has to do with the nature of government and the nature of culture in Iran. At the same time, the couple are both actors in a theater actors in a production of Death of a Salesman.
Hence the title.
It's not a salesman that attacks her. It's a reference to the play. And there are all kinds of connections between the various characters in this story and the characters in the play. And it's very, very interesting film. It's very well structured. You know, it's very taut as far as, you know, the tensions, the emotions are very strong. It's just really a spectacular performance by the lead actor in particular, who becomes obsessed with finding the person who attacked his wife. So I highly recommend it.
And that's over at the Frontenac or something, I see.
Yeah, I think it's at Plaza Frontenac.
Very good drama.
Get
a chance to see it sometime. Yeah, definitely.
All right, so Kate highly recommends The Salesman, and you can go and look at her 5-star review over at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. Hey, we're doing great, guys. We're down to our last movie, and we're right on schedule. But only Jim has seen John Wick 2.
The contract has gone international.
You have no idea what's coming.
Somebody please get this man a gun.
Chapter 2 of John Wick, the saga.
John Wick 1, I thought, was kind of a pretty generic action film. I didn't care for it that much. But,
I actually prefer that.
You prefer
that
1 to 2?
Yeah, because you get more into his character. You get to know more about his past, and you see him bonding with the
Well, basically,
dog
he's getting revenge. Basically, that was it. He's getting revenge about the guys who murdered his dog.
Yeah. Well, at the start of this, he's going after the guys.
Did he get a new dog, though?
He's got a new dog. Okay. He's got a new dog, but he's the bad guys have stolen his muscle car, his classic Mustang.
Even worse.
Yeah, so the first 10 minutes is him wrecking vengeance on them, and then it kind of slows down. He goes back to his opulent, located long in the forest estate. And he gets a visit from a mobster, and he produces this ornate old coin, and he says, "You owe me a favor." And, you know, Wick says, "Well, I'm retired." And he says, "No, you have to do this for me." I think that's the character's name is Santino. He says, "I need a table at the sort of the board of directors of the mob, and I need a seat at the table, and I want you to eliminate my competition." And it turns out this is the guy's sister. And Wick says, "I'm not going to do this." And, you know, and it closes the door on the guy. The guy turns around and uses a mini rocket launcher to destroy the place. And Wick
I hate when that happens.
Wick confers with Ian McShane, who's back as the manager of the Continental, the hotel for assassins. He says, "No, you have to honor this." So Wick goes to Rome to do this job, and the job is completed. And Santino does a little turnaround and then puts a $7 million bounty on John Wick. So not only is he, you know, going after the sister and all of her bodyguards. The main bodyguard is played by Common, by the way, and running through Rome and blasting things. Then he's on the run. He's the hunted for the last about third of the film. So it was weird because in between the opening sequence with the car and then going to Rome, I felt myself nodding off a little bit. There was a lot of talky talk between the Winston character and the Santino character.
Did you review it?
I did. I think I might have given it 3, 3.5. Okay. If you like the first one, you like this one. And John Wick's got his patented move down. After he blasts some bad guy in the chest just before he passes them, he'll put two in the head. So he likes to ventilate noggins in this one again. So, you know, the bodies piled up. You know, there must be, you know, about 150 casualties or whatever. Just, you know, it's just literally overkill. You know, it's just on and on and on. So, and they're promising a third one. They say this is part of a trilogy.
But do they
so
show a trailer for it at the end of the
they
film?
They don't at this one, okay. but boy, the audience just it was packed there, and I guess that first film has sort of become sort of a cult hit, and, you know, very popular on streaming and video and all that. So
maybe with the young kids.
But, you know, Keanu really doesn't have much to do in this besides
does he ever?
Yeah, and you know, he looks like he's hurt and, you know, tired and all that, but he just keeps on plowing along. If you like this, then you like you like this flick. You know?
So Jim's kind of up the middle on John Wick 2, and we are done reviewing movies. We got some other movies we're going to review next week that we're going to be seeing tonight. You guys are seeing Fist Fight. What's that actor's name? Stars in it?
Charlie Day. Ice Cube is in it.
So Charlie Day is like carrying a movie. Is this his first movie he's carried? Maybe first lead.
Co-lead. Well, he and Ice Cube are kind of co-leads.
Everybody likes Ice Cube. Okay, well, we'll find out what you think about that next week. And Wednesday night, we're seeing The Great Wall with Matt Damon. We just made fun of that a little bit ago. But Willem Dafoe and lots of Chinese dudes.
Yes.
And I'm reviewing that for WeareMovieGeeks.com. Look for my review of The Great Wall Thursday night at WeareMovieGeeks.com. And then there's also The United Kingdom. Are we seeing that this week or is that next week?
That's next week.
Okay, that's David O. Yellow O. So we won't be able to review the United Kingdom.
We're seeing something on Thursday. I don't know if we can mention that, but it's something that's going to be a big March release. So we'll be talking about that closer to the time it's released.
What's that?
That's Logan.
Oh, Logan. Yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah. We can say the name of the movie. Logan, yeah, that's Hugh Jackman is the character that he played in all those Wolverine movies, but they don't really promote it. They're not promoting it like a superhero movie.
No, it looks very dark and gritty, and it's supposedly his last time as Wolverine, but not if Ryan Reynolds has his way. He wants to do a Deadpool meets Wolverine movie, and that's fine by me.
All right. Well, we'll see. Let's talk about some local things going on movie-wise. Tonight is Three Stooges Night at Shifley, but it's a very special Three Stooges Night because it's Roger B., who was our guest in here in the studio a couple months ago. It's his 100th consecutive monthly Three Stooges Night, so congratulations to Roger.
Every night with the Stooges is a special one.
Yes, that's right. I agree.
But this is a bit of a milestone. Roger collects money for the National Children's Cancer Society, and he's been doing this 100 times, so he's collected, I don't know how much he's collected, tens of thousands of dollars, I assume. So way to go, Roger. That's 7 o'clock tonight at Schleifley Bottle Works. I don't even know if I'm going to get this podcast done by then.
Well, hopefully he's going to bring some goodies to.
Yeah, he is. He will. There'll be all kinds of fun stuff going on. Yeah. Saturday morning, I saw, what did I see? Barefoot in the Park.
Yes.
Which I had never seen before. Have you ever seen that, Kate?
Really? Yeah, I have.
Neil Simon classic.
I've never seen it. Yeah.
Mildred Natwick played Jane Fonda's mother, and she was nominated for an Oscar for that.
Hmm. And Charles Boyer is the landlord.
He was their neighbor.
Neighbor.
Who,
oh, the neighbor.
Who actually sleeps with Jane Fonda's mother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very much of its era.
It is. It was really, you know, the last movie where Jane Fonda kind of played the sort of the ingenue. She went, I mean, because that was just the year before Barbarella, and then they shoot horses, so her career really took a more serious turn after.
Was that before Cat Ballou, I wonder?
No, it's been after Cat Ballou.
Yeah, right after
Cat
Ballou. Okay. Was this our first pairing with Robert Redford?
They were in The Chase. No, The Chase would have been before.
Oh, okay.
Would have been before Barefoot in the Park, and then, of course,
The Electric Horseman.
With Willie Nelson.
That's right. Willie Nelson
should have been in Barefoot in the Park.
But let's look like it has some nice New York locations.
Oh, yeah. That was good. I enjoyed it. I'd never seen it, and now I have. I'll never see it again, but I certainly have no regrets going there Saturday morning. Next month, which will be March 11th, will be Vertigo.
Ooh, that's
starring Kim Novak, who's 92 or something.
Yeah, it was her birthday yesterday.
Was it yesterday? Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Maybe that's why I knew that. And that'll be good. Jimmy Stewart and Alfred Hitchcock, one of his masterpieces.
Was it Sight and Sound that said that's the greatest film of all time?
That's one we're seeing over and over again.
Yeah.
And
especially definitely worth seeing.
It's very influential.
Over at the High Point.
A big screen movie, for sure.
Next Saturday, the 25th, also at the High Point, I will be hosting a midnight screening of Animal House.
Now, I might have to go to that.
Yeah.
I don't have to work Sunday morning, so I might have to go check that
out. That'll be fun. That'll be the 25th, which is the night before the Academy Awards.
Oh.
Academy Awards is Sunday the 26th, and I will be hosting the Oscars at the Tivoli. This will be the third year in a row I've done that. We show the Oscars there on the big screen, and during the commercials they turn the volume down, and I do Oscar trivia, and I've already got a big giant stack of goodies to give away as prizes, a lot of DVDs and Blu-rays, and I'm going to go to Allied and make them give me a bunch of stuff.
Bunch of swag.
I think the ceremony proper starts at 7:30, but the Tivoli will open its doors at 6. That is free, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I think I mentioned to you earlier that the British Oscars were over the weekend.
Yeah.
And the big winner there, unsurprisingly, is La La Land, got Best Picture.
That's not British.
I know. Well, they honor everything. But they had a couple of interesting choices there. Their Best Supporting Actor was Dev Patel.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm assuming, I didn't get to check. Look, I think Viola Davis got supporting actress, but best actress was Emma Stone. So I think now she's a major contender for best actress. Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be just between Natalie Portman and Isabelle Huppert, but there's a little race there. And Casey Affleck was back as best actor.
Oh, good. I'm glad to
see
that.
And best animated feature was Kubo and the Two Strings.
Yeah, very good. That might win the Oscar.
I don't know. I think it's Zootopia all the way. I think it's too strong, so we'll see.
In less than 2 weeks. And then next Monday we can predict our predictions.
Well, speaking of Oscars, you know, people who want to see the Oscar shorts, they can go see them at the Tivoli.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yes. Just the live action and the animated shorts.
That's right.
Yeah. I don't think they're doing the documentary shorts this year.
No,
Just these two. But they're great programs.
That's right.
No doubt about it. All right. Also, a documentary called The C Word is showing at Webster University this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. C stands for cancer. It's about I don't know what it's about. It's about cancer. It's a documentary about cancer, and it's supposedly really good. It's gotten a lot of good buzz. So if you are interested in that, go see The C Word at 7:30 at Webster University this weekend. Last week, I do my 16mm double feature night. I did Trading Places and Macon County Line. Jim didn't make it. Neither did Kate.
I was, after that screening that night, I was just beat down tired.
Yeah.
Well, you missed my big announcement about what I'm going to be showing next week at 16mm double feature night. That'll be March 7th. And it is another beloved comedy from the early 80s, from 1981. It is a comedy that won 2 Oscars, including Best Song and Best Supporting Actor for Sir John Gielgud. Of course, it's Arthur. Dudley Moore, who was nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah, my late father's favorite film.
Is that right?
That's right. He loved that. Yeah, we
was he a lovable drunk? Lovable millionaire drunk?
He liked a little bit, but he just thought that Dudley Moore was so funny. And then when they got a Betamax tape, we were able to get a transfer of that film for him. So he enjoyed that quite a bit.
Okay. And that'll be double feature with a great Charles Bronson movie from 1972, Chato's Land. Chato is an Indian who is being tracked down by this posse. And it's a Western, of course.
Is Bruce Davidson in there?
No, Bruce Davidson is not. But the posse is made up of some really good actors. Jack Palance, Richard Jordan, Simon Oakland, Ralph Waite, James Whitmore.
Oh, goodness.
I mean, a lot of good actors in Chato's Land, including Charles Bronson. And Charles Bronson actually has maybe 4 lines of dialogue in the whole thing. Well, but it's a great movie. It was his first movie that directed by Michael Winner, who went on to direct him in The Mechanic and Death Wish.
Yeah, you've got a statuette of him in Chato, don't you? Yes.
A resin kit.
Very, very impressive. Yeah.
And I picked up a 16mm print of the Valachi Papers just last week, which is another great Charles Bronson movie that was a sort of a Godfather knockoff about gangsters in the 30s and 40s. I'll be showing that in the coming months.
Yeah, I remember seeing that at the theater.
Oh, did you? That's a great movie.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It's directed by Terrence Young, who did the first couple 007 movies.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Mostly Italian cast, as I
recall. Yeah. Lino Ventura. No, but Jill Ireland's in there.
Yeah, I was thinking that she was in there.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about French films, because we love French films so much.
Oh, yes.
Cinema St. Louis does this thing every year called the Classic French Film Festival. And they'll show 9 or 10 classic French films. You're not hosting something this year, though, are you?
No,
last year.
I have done that several times, but not this year.
What did you host last year?
Oh, let's see. I think I did Queen Margot last
year.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
or maybe that was the year before.
Well, they're doing, let's see, looks like 9 films. And two of them are 35mm prints, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
St. Louis International Film Festival, which showed like 400 movies, only had one 35mm print, and that was Eyes of Fire. They're actually doing 2. One of the prints is last year at Murray and Bad. Have you ever seen that, Kate?
No, I haven't seen that one.
Okay.
No. Yeah, actually, if you're a fan of French New Wave, there's a lot of good things in this, which are some better known than others.
Yeah, and the other 35, though, is O Hazard Balthazar, which is about a donkey. Isn't that the one about the donkey?
That's right.
I've never seen that. Have you seen that?
I haven't either.
It's famous.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to see that. That's not something you usually see on a big screen, certainly in St. Louis, so it's worth checking out.
Yeah, but the festival kicks off Friday, March 10th with Au Revoir, Les Enfants.
A more famous film that is worth seeing over and over.
That's a Louis Malle film. I saw that at the High Point when it was new.
Mm-hmm. And another famous one they have is Day for Night.
And our friend Renee Hirschfeld will be hosting Day for Night. They always bring in some academics or some people like that and introduce the films. Kate did it last year.
Yeah, they have both film academics and French
there's some French people. I don't know who these people are.
professor.
I'm still trying to get Cliff to show A Rider on the Rain with Charles Bronson at the Classic French Film Festival. But
that might be a hard sell.
Cliff locks his door when I come knocking. Let's see. Three Colors Blue. That is Saturday, March 11th. Mm-hmm. I think Calvin Wilson, our friend from the Post-Dispatch, will be hosting.
I think you're right,
Nana is a silent film from 1926. I don't know anything about it, but I love silent films. And it's that will have live music by the Poor People of Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And they're quite good. And I'm really excited about that. I don't know anything about it. Have you seen that one? Nana?
No, but I definitely want to see that. Okay. That's directed by Renoir.
Oh, okay.
The director who is the son of the famous painter.
That is Sunday, March 11th, so I'll see you there. And then Friday, March 17th is Cleo from 5 to 7.
That I've seen several times.
Is that good? I'm not familiar with that.
It's very cinema verite.
Okay.
This woman is waiting for test results, medical test results, from 5 to 7.
Okay. Sounds interesting. Okay, Saturday, March 18th is last year at Murray and Bod, 35mm print. Sunday, March 19th is O Hazard Balthazar, which we just mentioned. That is also a 35mm print. Friday is Day for Night. Friday, March 24th, I should say, is Day for Night. Saturday, March 25th is Eyes Without a Face, which is a horror film.
Part of it. Yeah.
And that'll be hosted by our friend Andrew Wyatt from the Film Critics Association. I used to own a 16mm print of Eyes Without a Face.
Ooh.
I sold it, but it was English dubbed and cut, and it was retitled Horror Chamber of Dr. Faustus.
Oh, my.
But this is, of course, the French full-length French version. It's really a good horror film. It's very creepy.
Yeah, that's what I hear. That replacing faces and things.
Yeah,
like
and it's got some pretty gruesome stuff in it for its day. Yeah. And then finally, Sunday, March 26th, is Paris Belongs to Us. Never heard of it. But
another new wave.
Is that another new wavy thingy?
Yes.
All right, so that is the Classic French Film Festival, and you can go to cinemastlouis.org to find out about ticket information and more details about that. But it's always a good time. Those guys at Cinema St. Louis always know what they're doing. Anything else we want to talk about, guys?
Well, you recall a few weeks ago my raving about a documentary called Tower. Well, I was surprised to learn that it's going to be on PBS stations, hopefully Channel 9 in this area. I might check your local listings. I don't know if it's a part of America Frontline or one of those type of programs. But, yeah, it's going to be on broadcast TV in the next week or so.
Maybe American Experience.
Yes.
I saw that film, too, and that's outstanding.
Yes, and it's great that it's going to, you know, more people will be able to see it. You should have seen it in a theater, but, you know, just see it any way you can. It's a wonderful film.
They should have had Kurt Russell narrate that.
It's you might tell them something about what the film's about. It's a documentary.
Yes, I'll remind you that it is a documentary, a very uniquely told documentary about the 1966 Charles Whitman sniper attack on University of Texas. And it's told using rotoscope animation to recreate the mid-60s. And it's riveting. It's strangely beautiful, too,
even though it's
based on its tragic event. And, I wish it had been nominated for Best Documentary. If there could have been 7 or 8 nominees there, it definitely should have gotten.
I'll put something at WeirdMovieGeeks.com with the details about when that one might be playing on PBS when we find out. So go to WeirdMovieGeeks.com. We're going to have to wrap today's show up. We'll be back next Monday, and we can do some Oscar predictions and review The Great Wall and Fist Fight, and I'm sure there'll be a couple other movies. But for now, I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Betts.
Kate Marquis.
Signing off. Listen again next week.
Black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock. Black leather, smash, smash, smash. Black leather, crash, crash, crash. Black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock.
Forward in the battle, there, chaps.
You happy in your work, Johnny?
By the lift.